You're listening to Community Conversations on the Forum on the Hill. From 4 to 6 p.m. each day this week, we'll talk with lawmakers, educators, health professionals, and local leaders in an effort to promote collaboration on community-wide issues. Let's navigate the path forward together. Presented by the Orange County Arts Commission, Orange County Visitors Bureau, and UNC Health. The Forum on the Hill, only on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com.
And welcome into day three of the Forum on the Hill. Again, 5 days, 10 hours covering a bunch of topics affecting our community as we get to the end of 2020 and head into 2021. Aaron Keck here with you at 97.9 The Hill Studios. This hour, we are focusing geographically on issues affecting Chatham County specifically. Going to be joined here in the studio by a bunch of special guests over the course of this hour. We'll have a couple more coming in the second half, but we're going to get the hour started by welcoming two special guests into the studio. Bill Horner is the publisher of the Chatham News and Record. You know him well if you listen to the Aaron Keck Show, frequent guest on our Chatham County Roundup every single week. Bill, thank you so much for being with us today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Aaron. Thanks for
good to
for
see
invite.
You in person for the first time in a while.
Yeah, thank you.
We're also joined by Randy Voller, publisher of Chatham County Line, president of VRC Limited. You may also know him as the former mayor of Pittsburgh. Randy, thank you so much for being with us. How are
great
you?
Great to be here, Aaron.
So let's get started with kind of the general question. We're coming on the end of 2020. This forum is about lessons learned from 2020 and how we can take those lessons moving forward into 2021 and beyond. And certainly the biggest thing that happened in 2020 is the impact of COVID-19. So let's start with that kind of state of Chatham County question with the pandemic now 9 months old and a light at the end of the tunnel. But as someone recently said, we don't know exactly how long that tunnel is still. We're just seeing a light at the end of it. Where do things stand in Chatham County in terms of challenges, in terms of opportunities, the health impact, the mental health impact, the financial impact? What should folks know?
Well, I think obviously, one of the things we have to think about is the unknowns of COVID. We know a lot of what has happened. There are just so many unanswered questions and so many things that are impossible to know about what may happen. So, we've got the economic impact that we've obviously seen, but I think, there's a lot of exuberance about the stock market and so forth, but there are things that we are going to see as far as the economic fallout from COVID. And then another thing that we can talk about is education, the impact on education particularly. And one of the things that, Aaron, you and I have talked about before is that the vulnerabilities that we have in Chatham County have certainly been magnified during COVID. There's no question. And we talk about broadband access, which has been an issue in Chatham County for a long, long time. And with remote learning being so prevalent, and who knows what remote learning is going to look like even in the early part of 2021, that has really been a significant issue for schools, for kids, for parents in Chatham County. So that's got to be a part of the conversation too. Mm-hmm.
Do you see, and this is something that both of you have been following very closely in the last 9 months, and we've talked about this in so many different capacities and facets and iterations, the fact that all of the issues that we were facing as a community are amplified, magnified, exacerbated over the course of the last 9 months, really hitting us more consciously than they may have been 9 months ago. Do you see us doing enough about it than we should, or are we still kind of stagnant in terms of like actually taking the steps that we need to address these issues?
Well, I certainly think that COVID-19 is highlighted, as you point out, or magnified the attention to affordable housing issues, the broadband issue that Bill has brought up, and issues of disparity. I mean, lots of people in Chatham County, as well as across the state of North Carolina, are going to bed hungry. Mm-hmm. There are people that need basic necessities, and when local, state, or federal government fail to meet the needs of its constituents, like not passing the HEROES Act, we've got people that have been waiting for months to get those payments that they were getting. I mean, one of the reasons that the economy was able to survive for as long as it did is there was direct payments going to citizens. I think it's going to be a very difficult winter in Chatham County for a lot of families.
Yeah, Bill?
Yeah, and this really, the urgency of what Randy just mentioned is so important. And so these key issues that we've talked about prior to COVID and or in the early days of COVID, they have become real, real urgencies. And when you talk about challenges, I think that there are opportunities there because these few key issues, affordable housing, food insecurity, broadband, and then the whole political division within Chatham County, those things have come into such sharper focus, particularly in an election year, that I think it presents an opportunity for us to really pick and choose as a community a few things to focus on to solve. If there are people who can, within the context of their own narrative, be willing to engage with the other side and engage collectively to try to address these issues. I mean, you know, affordable housing has been a problem for a long, long time, sharply into focus, particularly now. So it's an opportunity, it is a challenge, but it is an opportunity for us to try to do something about it.
I was just looking at some data that the Orange Chatham Association of Realtors put out, and people would probably be very surprised to know that the median and the average home price sale in October in Chatham County far exceeded that of Orange County. Now, I've been around here for 30 years, and that's the first time, it's probably not the first time it's happened, but it was pretty striking when I looked at the data for October.
Mm. Yeah, this is a really fascinating thing about our experience in the last 9 months is that as much of a struggle as it's been, and we're talking economically, even before we talk about the health impacts of the pandemic, just the economic and financial impacts and how much businesses are struggling and organizations and individuals and families, there are specific economic metrics that are doing incredibly weirdly well. And that affects the debate that we're having about this. And it makes it harder to get to the real important point that there are a lot of people that are seriously struggling in spite of the fact that the Dow Jones is through the roof and home prices are still increasing. It's a very odd thing that's happening.
Well, there have been winners and losers. There's no question.
Yeah.
We had a story earlier in the late spring, early summer about home sales. And so if you are a home seller, if you're looking to sell a home in Chatham County and you've got a higher dollar value home, you know, you're in a great position because the inventory is so low. But consequently, if you're on the other side of that, if you're looking to purchase a home because that inventory is low and the prices are high, you're a loser in that game. And so COVID, as we all know, has really forced winners and losers to be picked. And there are, unfortunately, a lot of items on the losing side in Chatham County that have to be addressed.
I think to your question earlier about COVID, it needs to be depoliticized and thought of as a local community issue. We need to mask up. We're in the studio with you. I've done a lot of radio. First time in a mask. Mm-hmm. Bill's in a mask, and you're in a mask.
Yep.
We're socially distanced.
Separated by plexiglass.
We're washing our hands.
Yep.
I know that a lot of people might feel that this is an infringement on freedom or aggravating, but frankly, we as a community have got to come together county by county to beat this. And you asked, like, what have we learned? Well, we learned that if we roll back the clock, it would be best that people in our community were very transparent from the beginning and let you know, like, hey, we have a problem at this assisted living facility, or we have a problem at the chicken plant, because if you try to hide the information, it just gets worse. And that is the role of local media. And I'm here with Bill. We come out once a month. We're online all the time. Bill comes out weekly. Local media plays an important role in connecting to the community and informing them of these stories.
Yeah, and when things are politicized, particularly, again, in an election year, and there is an administration that says that, you know, we, the business that Randy and I are in, that we're the enemy of the people, and there's this distrust that is fostered and encouraged. It's unfortunate because, you know, going back to the mask issue, you know, you can start at my office in Siler City and drive toward Pittsburgh, toward Chapel Hill, And you stop into businesses in the western part of Chatham County, and they will have a sign on the door that says a mask required, but you go in and no employees are wearing masks. Mm-hmm. And then as you get toward Pittsburgh, you know, more and more people are masked up. But, you know, the fact is we know empirically, we know data statistically that, that communities that have done what we've been all asked to do in terms of the mask have been more effective at fighting it. And so that speaks to what Randy mentioned, this politicizing of all these issues. We've got to get away from that and, you know, collectively figure out a way to take that part of the narrative out of our discussion about the way that we address problems.
Bill, you said something a couple of minutes ago that I immediately wrote down, and it gets exactly to this point. It's depoliticizing it and overcoming those differences and working together to find common solutions within the context of our own narrative. Mm-hmm. was what you said. Say more about that. What do you mean by that?
Well,
I think it's an important point.
I'm really personally immersed in this right now. I've just read a book called Pathways to Possibilities, which is just a phenomenal book that really deals with the fact that we all have a narrative. We all have stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves, and we all have stories that we tell ourselves about other people. And often that those stories, they're not adult stories. So we are making up stories, and we're living inside this narrative that's not really based on reality. We have to act like adults to tell ourselves adult stories about ourselves, to be able to look at the way that we think about things and to be able to, you know, toss aside our personal proclivities in order to partner or walk alongside somebody else who may believe differently in order to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of all the things that happened this year, I think the most memorable thing, the most, in thinking back to 2020, The single most memorable moment for me was back in the spring. There was an event at the Ag Center in Pittsburgh where there was a two-hour session about Confederate symbols. So it was a conversation with four experts. And I went as an interested observer. It was a fascinating learning experience to me. And I walked outside the Ag Center, and there are a small group of Confederate protesters, Confederate demonstrators. And as soon as we walked out, one of the people said, well, the brainwashing class is over, it looks like. And it really stuck with me because we're all brainwashed. You know, we all have certain beliefs that are based in, you know, whatever. Well, let's base it in fact. You know, Randy and I are both in the truth business. So let's think about basing our narratives in fact and being able to put aside opinions, politicizing, whatever the divisions are that are constructed in order to work together to kind of figure out solutions to these problems we're talking about.
What is the experience of being, and Randy, you mentioned this too, in local media right now? Because the financial landscape is difficult. The financial landscape was difficult 9 months ago, certainly is now, just because everyone is struggling. But at the same time, especially in the last 9 months, it's another thing that's been magnified and amplified, where I think we're much more aware of the importance of having good information and the vital role that local media plays. So what has been your experience?
My experience is that there actually is a hunger to get messages out, and that people want to get local messages that connect them to their community and to their community at large. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's quite difficult for someone running a local media operation because our businesses are struggling. You know, you're surviving on ad revenue or legal advertisements or things like that. So the financial part of it is quite difficult. But at the same time, I find that online and in the print, people want to see the stories. So for instance, we mail out 10,000 copies a month. We actually mail them, you know, every door direct mail to Briar Chapel, Farrington down to Pittsburgh. We overlap with Bill. We distribute some in Sour City, but he's coming out every week, so he's a different animal. Mm. And we get a lot of feedback from folks that want to know, for instance, that Chatham County made history on Election Day. We led the state in turnout once again. And
by like
elected,
a lot, by the way.
Yes,
yeah.
And we, almost 85%. We elected.
We were following that every day of the early voting yes. period. Like, this just keeps growing and growing.
And we elected the youngest Hispanic ever to serve as a county commissioner in the state of North Carolina, and one of the few from District 5, which overlaps with Siler City, Franklin Gomez Flores. So that was a significant story. Mm-hmm. And there's other stories like that. Robert Reeves, who's our rep, has now been elected to minority leader, and he's in line to potentially become Speaker of the House if the Democrats take the House. So these are stories that wouldn't get out there if Bill or I weren't publishing.
Yeah,
and there's just there's an information overload, obviously, with the internet, and I think the tendency of people to cocoon, which means to go to information sources that confirm their own biases, is unfortunate. Something we battle with all the time. It's something when I speak to civic clubs, from the beginning of recorded time to like 1996, there was 50 billion gigabytes of information that was generated over all those thousands of years. Today, 50 billion gigabytes of information is generated every like 8 minutes or something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of sources of information, and again, thinking about cocooning, I think it's valuable to think about, read, consume, digest information that maybe you don't agree with, that may be from a source that you have a hard time trusting, in order to be able to form an opinion that is informed. You know, a lot of people arrive at decisions and conclusions based on something that's popular instead of something that's factual, and that's a challenge that we face, because it's not about being popular, it's about factual reporting, reporting this compelling storytelling, important information that community needs to know. But it's not always fun to read, and it's not always entertaining, and that's the challenge that we face because of all the noise that's out there.
Mm-hmm. When you hear from readers, and I know just in general, people want local news and they want local information. Are you getting specifics in terms of this is specifically what I want, or this is what's missing, this is what I need?
Well, we get some interesting feedback because I typically run an opinion page where you have from left to right.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people don't like what they're reading from the center right, I get emails or letters or phone calls. How dare you publish that? Or I get people, the counter, calling in and saying, that was the most absurd thing I've ever read, right? Or if we insert the blue ballot, which the Democratic Party paid us to do, the Republicans contact me and say, how dare you do that? And I said, advertising is the free market. You can advertise too, right? And Bill's the same way. You can pay and we'll advertise, but we're not going to freely give this to you. So I actually enjoy publishing opinions that are, 180 degrees opposite, because it generates interest and people can see that there's another perspective, even if I personally or Bill personally didn't agree with it. I'm putting it out there. I draw the line, though. I'm not going to publish something that is going to be intentionally hurtful, right? I can reserve the right to not publish that. If people are calling for we should go and hurt our neighbors, no, I'm not going to publish that. You can go yourself and practice your First Amendment right. And I think Bill feels the same way.
Yeah, we were talking in our newsroom earlier last week and kind of thinking about 2020, and I made a comment, and I didn't intend this to be the way it came across, but I said it's been a monumental year.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about the Confederate Monument. I wasn't thinking about the Confederate Monument, but you think about, Chatham County has, there's a lot of parts of Chatham County's history that are not real comfortable. It's not a problem with that. I mean, it's just the way that we are as imperfect people. Who have lived for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important for us to be able to think about that, and talking about stories people disagree with. We've been covering the demonstrations, we had a story last year on the Chatham County's lynching legacy. We had people who canceled subscriptions. People says, I do not want to read about that. I don't care. That's not what I want. I don't want to read about that. I don't care about that. It's part of our, it's a really dark part of our history that we just don't need to be thinking about. And it's like, well, I think we do need to reckon with it. And that's part of what happened this year with the polarization and politicization we need to be able to have those conversations, at least have the conversations.
Yeah. One of the most insightful things that I heard all year, and it was about this particular issue, it's, you know, some random thing that gets passed around on social media, but it's still really insightful, that if you are reading history and it's not making you uncomfortable, then you're not reading history. History should be making you uncomfortable, and journalism is the first draft of history, so journalism should be making you uncomfortable as well. But the problem now is that there's such a huge landscape of available media markets that you can find very easily a media outlet that makes you feel 100% comfortable. People gravitate to that. And then the media outlets that are actually doing their jobs and presenting sometimes uncomfortable, inconvenient information are having a harder time finding and retaining viewers and listeners. And that's a difficult problem to overcome.
Well, we have to realize, you said something really important. Taking it a step forward, right now is going to be history for people 10, 15, 20, 50 years down the road. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to think about the history that we're writing today as we do, think, and act. No question that this is a really critical point, juncture in our history, in Chatham County's history too. And it is going to be studied and looked at. So why not take advantage of the opportunity that we've been presented by having these things come sharply into focus to address some of them?
Yeah, Randy?
Well, one of the roles of local media, to use a metaphor, is we need people to eat their spinach. You know, we're not providing junk food. I mean, other media outlets can provide that junk food, but at some point, people need to learn that there are major infrastructure issues up and down 15501, that there's an issue in Briar Chapel with Old North State, it needs to be resolved. You know, these are not necessarily super sexy stories, but they're stories that affect people's lives. If you don't have water, if you don't have sewer, if you don't have broadband, you're missing some of the necessities that you need in order to live in the community. So to me, that's the role of local media, and that's the important role that papers like Bill and I play, either in print or online. I would like to add that it's been a very challenging year for retailers and you know, brick and mortar retailers anywhere in America. But building on what Bill said, with the protests after the removal of the monument, and then right after their COVID-19, you'd have to ask yourself, you know, are we going to get, you know, frogs flying out of the sky or other pestilence revisited into downtown Pittsburgh, because our retailers there have really paid the price, and it's been a very difficult year and a half for them.
Yeah. Speaking with Randy Voller and Bill Horner, and Randy, Bill mentioned his particularly memorable moment, the thing that stuck with him from the last 12 months. What's yours?
Well, I think the thing that has really stuck with me is how resilient our community has been in the face of constant protesting downtown and then COVID-19 shutting things down. I mean, people actually have come together and attempted to make a go of it. Main Street Pittsburgh has put in a welcome center down there, downtown. I mean, you could have, if we didn't have the type of people we did in Chatham County coming together, people could have, you know, shut their doors and said, you know, I'm done. But they're not. Mm-hmm. They're still going at it. And to me, the resilience of the community is what sticks with me.
What opportunities exist for moving forward? We're talking about lessons learned from 2020, moving ahead to 2021. Some things from COVID are going to change for a longer term, if not permanent, and that's affecting the future of local communities. What opportunities exist?
I'll lead real quick, and then we can finish with Bill. I think one opportunity is the fact that we have broadband issues. There's a great opportunity for local government to play a role to get access to broadband, whether they light up school buses for children or they do more in creating areas where you can get access to broadband. There's a good opportunity for public-private partnership and creativity that can happen locally that can materially benefit people's lives. You know, this is a time for people to be innovative in response to the pandemic, in response to what it's done to our community. And I would call upon local leaders to think out of the box.
Yeah, Bill?
Yeah, and Robert Reeves has actually talked about that there is a really easy political solution to the broadband issue. It's just a matter of you know, people coming together to address that issue. But, you know, you ask about opportunities. I think, you know, starting from a grassroots basis, first of all, there's an opportunity for each of us to figure out where we can work to make the most substantive change. You know, I think about CORE, the Chatham Outreach Alliance, which is they've had some weeks where the number of people they have coming to them with food needs is double or triple or quadruple what it was this time last year. Mm-hmm. And people have stepped up. You know, neighborhoods have stepped up, individuals have stepped up, and businesses have stepped up. We worked with Abundance NC and the Caremongering Pittsburgh Facebook group to start the Neighbor to Neighbor program through the Chatham News and Record. And that is an opportunity for people to donate either their time and resources, labor, to help people who have immediate felt needs. Randy pointed out significantly the fact that there's been not enough help from government and so forth for people who need it the most, but there are ways that we can all help. Mm-hmm. And Neighbor to Neighbor just is one of those programs, one of many programs in Chatham County that is doing things and can respond quickly, can be very nimble in response to people's needs. So that's a great place to start, I think, is for each of us just to ask, what can I do today? What are two or three things I can do today to move the needle forward for somebody?
Speaking with Bill Horner and Randy Buller, and we got to already wrap up this conversation as we're getting on the end of the half hour. But as we do, final thoughts. What are your takeaways? What are your number one takeaways from the experience of 2020? What do you think is going to be the most memorable thing 5, 10, 15 years from now when this becomes capital H history?
Well, it's a game-changing year. There's no question. This is a year that, you know, is a pivot point for just about every aspect of the way that we live, work, and exist. So, you know, the takeaway for me is that there's an opportunity. What an opportunity to pay in, to be really specific and intentional about a few good things that'll make 2020 a positive, the turning point be a positive thing, instead of, oh, that's when things started to go downhill. We could say, you know, I know this is pie in the sky, but there's no reason why we can't say at some point, you know, 2020 was the year that caused us to figure out that we do need to address some real serious problems, and we need to do it collectively, we need to do it intentionally.
Every great thing that's ever happened started out as pie in the sky, so
yeah,
I like that. Randy?
I would say that we have an opportunity to decide whether we want to love each other as a community and pull together or pull apart. And with leadership changing at the top in D.C., we might have someone new giving us a different beat for the band. But, you know, I think that this is going to be, you know, a battle for the soul of who we are in our communities. Are we a community that turns against our neighbor and turns our back to our neighbor? Or will we be a community that embraces our neighbor even when we don't agree with them and actually become stronger in the process?
There's some really prominent stories of both sides of that in Chatham County, the divisiveness, but also the way in which people have come together. Are you optimistic?
Of course I'm optimistic. One of the things that makes me most optimistic, having worked in politics for 15 plus years, is that even when I don't agree with people, Chatham County is voting at a historically high rate and has been for years, which means at the basic level, people are engaged. And instead of turning against their neighbor in a violent form, they're going to the ballot box and they're casting their vote. And to me, that's always a beacon of hope.
ChathamCountyLine.org for the Chatham County Line, ChathamNewsRecord.org.
.com.
For the Chatham News and Record. Go to both and find out more about Chatham County. Bill Horner, Randy Voller, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
It's great. Thank you.
Time is 32 minutes past the hour. We are nowhere near done. Coming up next, we are going to hear from Sam Rauf, project manager from the Chatham Economic Development Corporation. And Bill mentioned the CORE Food Pantry. Melissa Driver Beard is the executive director. We'll hear from her as well when the community Forum on the Hill returns on 97.9 The Hill. Back with more after this.
Stay tuned for more community conversations with the Forum on the Hill, sponsored by the Orange County Arts Commission, Orange County Visitors Bureau, and UNC Health. only on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com.
Hi, it's Lori Policelli with the Chapel Hill Orange County Visitor Bureau. The holidays might look a little different this year with masks and social distancing, but the spirit of giving and love is alive and well in Orange County. Remember to support your friends and neighbors who own retail shops in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Hillsborough. Your gift to your loved ones will also be a gift to one of our hardworking local businesses. Let's all get out and give back this season.
Hi, I'm Katie Murray, Director of the Orange County Arts Commission. North Carolina is often called the writingest state, and I think Orange County is the writingest county. Here's acclaimed author and UNC faculty member, Daniel Wallace.
I'm Daniel Wallace. I'm proud to be part of a community that nurtures the literary arts and enjoy playing a part in the Piedmont Laureate program.
The arts industry has been decimated by the pandemic. The future character and vibrancy of our community relies on our support of this critical industry. Donate to the Orange County Arts Support Fund today at artsorange.org/support. Fund.
At UNC Health, we're experts in primary care and caring. Our specialists don't just see a condition. We see you, the whole you, mind and body. Because when we know you better, we're better at getting you well and keeping you well. And with more experts in each office, same-day appointments, and more urgent care centers, it's no wonder it's the better way of primary caring. Find the right provider for you and your family at uncprimarycare.org.
During this season of great joy and celebration, we are mindful that many in our community are experiencing great need. Over the past year, Cora has experienced a 50% increase in the number of families visiting the pantry and who are facing food insecurity in Chatham County. Will you help ensure that Cora has the resources to guarantee that families don't go hungry? Please make a gift today, and together we will build a community without hunger. Visit corafoodpantry.org to learn more and make an online gift.
I'm Aubrey Williams, General Manager of 97.9 The Hill, where we are gearing up for a new year and some fresh and compelling programming. January 4th, set your morning alarm and tune in for something new and great.
Hey, it's Aaron Kank, and I'm really excited to start waking up with you every weekday morning from 6 to 9 for This Morning with Aaron Kank. Join me and Victor Lewis as we get you going with local news and sports, great music, fun conversations, informative topics, and everything else you need to start your day right here on The Hill.
And for your afternoon drive, catch up on all the latest from our news team.
Join me, News Director Brighton McConnell, later in the day. Learn about daily headlines and developing stories from around our community during News on the Hill with Brighton McConnell. We'll have traffic and weather updates, interviews, music, and much more to keep you informed. Live from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. every weekday.
Bringing you local news and information on the air and online. 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. Proud to be your hometown radio station.
Welcome back to Community Conversations on the Forum on the Hill. Presented by the Orange County Arts Commission, Orange County Visitors Bureau, and UNC Health. Hear the full conversation and catch anything you miss at chapelboro.com/forum on the hill.
And welcome back, as the man said, to Forum on the Hill. Aaron Keck here with you in 97.9 The Hill Studios. This hour, we are talking Chatham County and coming at it from a variety of different angles and perspectives. Certainly many, many more angles and perspectives that we're not going to get to cover in this hour, but we'll get to the tip of the iceberg at the very least this hour, because there is a lot to talk about. Last half hour, we came at it from the perspective of local media and journalism. This half hour, we're coming at it from two different perspectives, economic development in Chatham County and also the nonprofit sector of Chatham County's economy and community as well. Joined in the studio by Sam Rauf, who's the project manager for the Chatham Economic Development Corporation, and Melissa Driver-Beard, who is the executive director of the aforementioned Cora Food Pantry. Sam, Melissa, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Aaron.
Hey, Aaron, thanks for having us.
And kind of getting this conversation started with the same question that I've been launching every conversation with: what is the state of things in Chatham County from your perspective right now? Sam, I'll start with you, just from the perspective of economic development. Where were we 9 months ago or 12 months ago, I guess, and where are we now?
Yeah, so 12 months ago was a much different story. It's been pretty interesting the past year to see both the historic highs and historic lows that we've experienced. So right around March, our unemployment rate in Chatham County was hovering right around 3%, which was historic lows, and it was super difficult for businesses to find employees that they needed. Business was going great, stock market was up, everything was going as well as it could, really. Now, obviously, much different here in the pandemic. It's kind of ebbed and flowed over the past 9 months with everything shutting down, and right now we're at a pretty interesting point. Our unemployment got around 9% in May when things shut down, so that's went from 3 to 9 at its worst, and we're back down to sitting around 4, 4.5 right now. I think a lot of credit to that is to the government programs that were in place, and right now I'd say the current status is we're at a decent point, all things considered. There are still plenty of people suffering, but in the context, we're at a pretty good point. But the next couple of months are going
to
be critical.
To what extent has this experience changed demand for businesses who are thinking about moving to Chatham County, or people who are thinking about relocating to Chatham County, or businesses in Chatham County thinking about staying or going? What are you hearing different than you were a year ago?
Yeah, so obviously as the pandemic was happening, everything shut down. It was really quiet on that front for a few months as everyone was figuring things out. Then it sped up really, really quickly. I think with any recession that happens or decline in the stock market and the economy, construction costs decrease, businesses, it's much easier for them to make these large capital expenditures. And so we have seen a recent uptick, not only in Chatham County, but across the region and across North Carolina, talking to colleagues across the state, a huge uptick in interest, especially with some of the impacts of COVID driving that, as long as it's general recession as well.
Mm-hmm. Is it interest from businesses that might have been interested a year ago, or is it a different type of business that you wouldn't have seen before?
I would say a mix. It's still from the industries that Chatham has a strong hold in, life science and advanced manufacturing and health science. But I think the sheer amount that we've seen is maybe some of it's driven by COVID that we would not have seen without the pandemic.
And when it comes to economic development, there's always the focus on attracting new business. There's also the focus on retaining existing businesses.
Exactly.
And you've got that balance to strike.
Right.
And now I assume there's got to be some talk about preserving existing businesses as well that aren't necessarily thinking about relocating that you want to keep here, but just keep in business, right? How much is that balance changed?
Absolutely. It's our number one focus through this pandemic is making sure that businesses we currently have in Chatham County were trying to meet their needs. And as things went down, we created a guide, as a lot of the economic development groups did, of trying to organize all the CDC recommendations and everything else to hand out to businesses. And I'd say there's a huge credit to our local health department. Mike Selleck is the director, who did a fantastic job and still does today of working with our businesses through this and getting them the information that they need to be successful and to adapt in this environment. And so that was a huge focus for us, especially as things were happening, of addressing, it shifted from workforce needs and the economy is going really well to, okay, how do I just continue to operate? How do I, with my customers shut down, different part of the country, my suppliers shut down, how do I continue to operate and stay alive and get connected to the governmental programs that were running out? So that was a huge focus for us. And obviously, attraction has sped up, but that has not taken our eye or our focus off of our existing businesses and trying to still help them out.
So that's the overview with economic development. Turning to the nonprofit sector, Melissa Driver Beard, who's been waiting patiently for the last 6 minutes. Give us the status of you and Cora Food Pantry and just the nonprofit sector in general. We've spoken a couple of times in the context of the pandemic, and it's always fascinating and troubling and heartening
right.
at the same time to hear you talk about your experience. What's your experience now?
Well, just like Sam said, things are so incredibly different now than they were a year ago. Every year for us in November and December are busy months, right on top of the holidays. But last year this time we were averaging maybe 50 to 60 families per day. The pantry was completely stocked with food. We might have anywhere from 20 to 40 volunteers in on any given day. And, that was what a normal day would look like in November or December. Fast forward a year, and things are completely and utterly different. We were a choice pantry. We still claim to be a choice pantry, but we've turned into the Chick-fil-A model of food pantries and are now serving everything curbside and drive-through style. And so people no longer come in and shop. They're mm-hmm. receiving all of their food in bags or boxes. And fortunately, though, we're able to give out as much or more food than we were last year this time. Our restaurant partners and grocery store partners and everybody throughout the entire community has been so unbelievably willing to donate and to participate and get involved in supporting those that might be facing food insecurity in the community. But over the past year, all of our programs, across all programs and all visits, we've seen a 137% increase in need.
Mm-hmm.
In the past year, we've seen 800 new families register, which in a normal year would be less than 100. So the need is staggering, and it's just continuing to rise. People who have not had to ask for help ever in their lives are having to come for the first time. And, you know, that may just be one time that they come. It may be something that turns into a little bit more of a chronic need. And again, we've been so incredibly fortunate to be able to meet that. But, you know, our days now, a slow day is 75 families. A busy day is 150.
Mm-hmm.
I think our record is around 175.
When was that?
I think it was at our last mobile market. So we have a mobile market once a month on the fourth Tuesday of the month over in Siler City to serve the western half of the county. And we serve pretty much the same way, drive-through style out near the hospital. And, you know, it's typical that during the holiday season we would be a little bit busier. But we're ramping up for what we believe will be a very busy January and February because we don't know what will happen with stimulus packages. We, too, are watching unemployment rates, and we're worried that continued isolation, continued stay-at-home orders, you know, will sort of breed a little bit of fear and force people to stay home. And some that might otherwise go to grocery stores might not feel safe doing so, so they'll come to us. And some people will come to us just because they want that socialization. And, you know, we recognize that some of the clients that we see, we might be the only person they talk to that day. And we're not in a situation right now where we have 30 minutes to spend with a client. We may have 3 to 5 minutes.
Mm.
So our service model has changed really dramatically. And it's getting it done. It's feeding the people that need to be fed in Chatham County, and we're ever so happy to be able to do that. But we'll also be happy to get back to something resembling normal.
How does this, I might have asked you this last time, but I forget the answer, so I'll ask again. How does this experience, like we went through a really nasty economic downturn not that long ago in
right.
2008, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Mm-hmm.
How does this experience compare to that in terms of the need that you're seeing or the experiences that people are having or are coming to you?
You know, unfortunately, I really can't address that from the CORA perspective because I've only been there 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know the statistics off the top of my head for the numbers of people that we might have been serving then. You know, I know that we were much smaller scale then. We had, I think, one staff person on board, and we're running mostly through volunteers and probably serving around 5,000 or 6,000 people a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're serving 57,000 people across all programs and all visits, or I think it's about 15,000 individuals. So it's a totally different story than it was primarily from a capacity issue.
Yeah.
We just didn't have the staff and volunteers and the donations and the infrastructure set up the way we do today. So I can't make much of a comparison.
Also, the population of Chatham County is a lot different now versus, that's true too.
I mean, and, you know, we've done a much better job, I think, in part thanks to you, on outreach and social media. And so more people are aware of who we are and what we do than they would have been in 2008.
So this question has also come up, not in question form, a couple of times already in just this hour. The fact that people are obviously struggling, whether it's individuals, families, businesses, kind of every sector. And at the same time, we're seeing some economic indicators that are doing quite well. The mm-hmm. stock market is up. The unemployment rate, same as you mentioned, higher now than in March, but still mm-hmm. quite a bit down from where it was in the summertime. And yet, Melissa, you're still seeing the number of families in need continuing to rise and rise. So
yes.
I don't even know if you have an answer to this question, but I'm fascinated if there is a good answer. Is there a common economic indicator that actually matches up with the rise or the decline in actual on the ground need that you experience.
Oh, I wish there was. You know, I can't tell you what a data analytics geek I've turned into in the last 9 months, which
we all have.
Everyone's also a public health expert, yep. Which is interesting.
Yeah. This is the closest I've ever come to sort of like disaster relief or emergency management, and it's been fascinating. But we have tried to nail down a trend, an indicator, something that would enable us to do more than look into our crystal ball and figure out what's going on. So we haven't found that tie that we would really like to find that would say, okay, when this happens, we're going to start to see things slow down a little. Obviously, I think as COVID hopefully becomes a thing of the past, we will see some of the need decrease. When more jobs come back to Chatham County, we will see the need decrease. When kids are in school, I think we'll see some things change. We know that there are indicators just out there in the general community that give us a feel for what will happen, but our trends don't follow typical trends, and I so wish they did.
Yeah, one thing I would highlight that's not perfect indicate that, but it can give a decent suggestion is the labor force participation rate, because as we've seen the unemployment in that time go from 3 to 9 to 4. Over that 9 month span in Chatham County, labor force has lost 2,000 workers. Mm-hmm. So that also impacts your unemployment rate because that's based off of the labor force. So you have 2,000 people who now are not even have a job or actively looking for a job. And a lot of that makes sense if your kids at home, maybe both parents can't be working anymore, or demographics of the county, people are retiring, whatever it is. That's something that as a labor force, hopefully those numbers start to rise again. That means more people are coming off the sidelines being employed, and could mean less people for your services.
Well, and one of the interesting things that we've noticed is as we collect data on the people that come to us, a great majority of them are working. Mm-hmm. They have two or three minimum wage jobs. They're the working poor. And I think one of the biggest indicators for us might be an increase in minimum wage or somebody passing the living wage. I know there's the Durham Living Wage Project, and I believe there's one in Orange County as
too,
well.
Yeah.
Were there something like that in Chatham County, and we saw that there was going to be a significant increase in the living wage, then I think we would see our numbers take a turn. But other than that, I don't know that there's a real trend that we could tie it to.
Yeah, it's a great point. Wage stagnation is a huge problem, not only in Chatham, North Carolina, but all across the country, and like you're saying, a federal minimum wage raise or a living wage program, I think those are great things to focus on.
What can be done about that at the local level? In North Carolina, local governments don't have a lot of power there, but what can local officials, local leaders do?
Yeah, I think Orange and Durham have a great model to go off of having a livable wage that's pertinent to that specific geographical area. That does require a lot of buy-in from businesses, not only from community leaders to want to do that, and it certainly has to do a little bit in our work and with the types of businesses that we want to attract into the county, making sure that they're paying a certain wage, and our incentives, if it gets to that point, and projects are structured for that to try to incentivize those who are paying higher wages to come.
I think it boils down to education, as to so many things when it comes to working with local government or even the public. There are not a lot of I won't say there's not a lot of officials. They probably understand the concept of the living wage and the necessity of it. Certainly advocating for it and making sure that the officials and the public understand what it means to pay a living wage, what it means to earn a living wage. We hear so many misconceptions about the types of people that come to food pantries. And it's not uncommon to hear the statement, they're just not working hard enough. And to know that they're working two and three jobs and doing literally everything they can to make ends meet is disheartening, to know that they're doing that and they still can't pay the bills. So it is a matter of education and speaking more about the importance of it and really mapping out, what it takes to live in any of these areas around.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great point. I think it points to a lot of the opportunities we have, going into 2021 or just whenever this vaccine can be widely spread or the pandemic subsides, that we start talking about an economic recovery, I think there's a lot of opportunity in everything you just said to be included in that.
How do the two of you, or the economic development sector and the nonprofit sector, like how do the two sectors typically work together? How do you enhance each other?
Yeah, I mean, we if nonprofits reach out to us, obviously, mostly it's when trying to make business connections and look for business support of programs, whether through funding or use of space, and we're always happy to make those connections. Obviously, there's we can't make any guarantees, but through our work with the retention, we have contacts with local businesses and always happy to share that. And, you know, really it's all about trying. We are actually a nonprofit as an economic development organization, mm-hmm. so there is that tie-in as well that we do operate similarly to how other nonprofits, so we're involved with county organizations that support all of nonprofits. But, you know, that's the biggest thing for us, is just trying to find ways to support the great work, because all nonprofits really support, you know, government programs that don't have enough money and fill in the gaps of government programs. And that's where we want to try to help support locally and help build our community that way.
Well, and I think conversely, nonprofits look at economic development from two different perspectives. It's something that we try to keep our finger on the pulse of, because we know that if things are going well in the county in general, then it's likely that hopefully our services won't be as needed. But, you know, we also try to do our part too. We had a wonderful opportunity this past summer to work with UNC and some other groups in Chatham County to support a food hub. So we were able to support local restaurants and bringing some of their workers back into employ, making sure that they got paid, making sure those restaurants were selling a little bit more food, and that we were also including Quora in that, so that if when people placed their orders for food, it could be either food through us that was free, or, you know, a local casserole from Best Food Cafeteria. It could go either way. And it spoke to me because that was a wonderful, wonderful economic model and a way to give back to the community that had been so generous to us and keep restaurant workers engaged and employed, and also a wonderful social justice model, because really nobody in the line picking up food at those points knew who needed free food and who was paying for their food. So it put everybody very much on an even playing field, which really appealed to me.
Speaking with Sam Ruff and Melissa Driver Beard, and we've got to start wrapping up. We're still a few minutes away, but one thing that I've been asking everyone, and this has really stood out to me in the last year, all the conversations that I've had, there are these little things that stick with you, right? The things that, you know, little insights that hit you in ways that you're still remembering later. And Melissa, you've given me two, just in the two conversations that we've had, and we've talked about this before. One of them is you were the one who first clued me into the fact that nonprofits were going to have an issue with volunteers at the beginning mm-hmm. of this, because so many are older and at higher risk. And then the last conversation that we had, you talked about the number of people who just random strangers who swung by in the first month and said, what do you need? What can we do? And whatever it was, they went and did it.
Yeah.
What stuck with you? What are the things that have stuck with you?
Oh, my gosh, so many things. You know, both positive and negative stories. I won't say things are getting better, but, you know, so many of our volunteers have tried to come back mm-hmm. And do anything they can, perhaps even at their own peril. And, you know, they're volunteering in off hours. They're trying to volunteer when it's not very busy in the building, or coming right out and, you know, diving into it all and getting involved. We still have folks that are incredibly generous and offering to do food drives and still driving by and asking what we need, or coming in and asking what we need. You know, we're getting phone calls and emails and approaches on absolutely a daily basis. The faith-based communities, the other local nonprofits, the porch communities, everybody that's been willing to contribute, I just simply can't say enough about. But, you know, then on the flip side of that, one of the things that I remember is at one of our mobile pantries, I was walking out into the line of cars and handing out forms for people to fill out who maybe hadn't been with us before, and approached a young mother, I would say probably in her early 30s, a cute little toddler in the back seat. And she just looked so frightened and so confused, and very reluctantly admitted that she'd never been with us before, and how did this work, and what did she do, and would she qualify? And, you know, the fear and confusion and I guess, loss of dignity were all very evident. And so, you know, we did everything possible to just set our mind at ease and say, oh, yeah, hey, it's fine. It's cool that you're here. We're going to get you totally set up, whatever you need. So, you know, it's been really hard, I think, to let everybody know that we're not going to run out of food. We're going to take care of their needs no matter what. We're going to make it happen. And that's even been the mindset of all of the volunteers and all of the staff, is everybody has remained 100% committed, which I've been so proud and honored to see. And we have just made it happen. Sometimes I don't know how, but it comes through. And I think it's been just the unending support from the Chatham community.
Sam Rao, if you're going to get the last word here, what has stood out for you from 2020?
Really just the strength and how dedicated and resilient the businesses we have in Chatham are. A lot when things are going down, pivoted and found new ways to bring in revenue. Mm-hmm. We have Galero in downtown Pittsburgh, which is a medical device manufacturer, who I think now has produced something like 800,000 face shields. And Governor Cooper was there this past week just to show appreciation for the work they've done. And we've had another manufacturer in Siler City, Charter Furniture, who usually makes a variety of furniture products, pivot to making masks and gowns. And just the creativity that business had to pivot and to keep their, mm-hmm. the business afloat, but their employees on their payroll as well. Mm-hmm. And then now through finding ways to work and create safe environments that are a lot of times safer than just being out in the community with all the COVID items that they have in the business. It's been tremendous and inspiring to see how they have risen to the occasion and done everything they can to take care of their employees.
And that wraps up our hour on Chatham County. Much, much more to say, but unfortunately we're coming up on the end of the hour. But Sam Ralph, Melissa Driver-Beard, thank you both so much for all you do and for being here with us today.
Thank you, Aaron. Appreciate it.
Coming up next, as the Forum on the Hill continues, we're going to talk athletics. We'll have a panel including UNC Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham and a bunch of special guests alongside him. That's coming up next as the Forum on the Hill continues after this.